Are you ready to dive into something that's been getting a lot of attention lately, especially with the 2024 election coming up? I'm talking about the U.S. Electoral College,
Oh, yeah.
that system that really determines who becomes president.
That's right. It's so fascinating how many people, I think, go to the polls and they don't really understand the ins and outs of this system.
And you've probably heard that sometimes the person who wins the most votes across the country doesn't become president.
That's right.
It sounds crazy, but by the end of this deep dive, you'll be able to explain it to anyone.
Absolutely.
We're going to uncover how it works, look back at some of those really close elections where the Electoral College like totally changed the outcome.
Right. And you know what's interesting about those instances? They weren't just historical footnotes, you know? They actually highlight how this system can have a massive impact on the direction of American politics.
For sure, shaping policies, influencing global events.
Totally.
Okay, so let's unpack this whole Electoral College thing.
Okay.
First of all, it's not like a real college, right? That there's no tours or anything like that.
No, it's not a physical place.
Yep.
It's a process that's written into the U.S. Constitution to choose the president.
Got it.
You can think of it this way. Each state gets to put together a group of people called electors.
Okay.
And these electors are the ones who officially cast votes for president based on their state's results.
So they're kind of like these VIP representatives that make things official.
Exactly. And this whole setup came about because the founding fathers were trying to find a compromise. You know, should Congress pick the president or should it be a direct popular vote? And they came up with this in-between system.
It's like they were playing political Tetris trying to fit all these ideas together.
That's a great analogy.
So how many electors are there total?
There are 538 electors in total.
Okay.
And to become president, a candidate needs at least 270 of their votes.
538, got it.
Yeah.
But how does each state get its number of electors?
All right, so it's all based on how many people a state has in Congress.
Okay.
Each state gets a number of electors that's equal to its total number of senators, which is always two, plus its number of representatives in the House.
Okay, so bigger states with more people have more electors because they have more representatives.
Exactly. So, for example, California has a massive 54 electoral votes because of its large population. And then you have a state like Delaware with only three electoral votes.
That's quite a range.
Yeah, it is.
So, how do these electors actually decide who to vote for? Do
Okay.
they just get to choose whoever they want?
So in most states, it's what's called a winner-takes-all system. It's kind of like if you're playing a board game and if you control a territory, even by a tiny bit, you get all the points for that territory. So even if a candidate wins a state's popular vote by a small margin, they get all of that state's electoral votes.
So that's where it gets interesting.
Yes.
A really close win in a big state equals a lot of electoral power.
A lot of power.
Are there any exceptions to this winner-takes-all rule?
There are. Nebraska and Maine do things a little differently. They actually split their electoral votes based on who wins each congressional district within the state, as well as who wins the overall statewide vote.
So they kind of break it down a little bit more. So walk me through how that works in Nebraska and Maine.
All right, so both states give two electoral votes to whoever wins the statewide popular vote. But then for the remaining electoral votes, each congressional district is like its own mini election. Whoever wins the most votes within that district gets that district's electoral vote.
So even if a candidate loses the overall popular vote in those states, they could still snag a few electoral votes.
Exactly. It's a more nuanced approach that reflects the different opinions within those states.
Interesting. So once all the votes are counted in each state on election night, do we immediately know who the new president is?
Not quite that instant. Each state has to officially certify its election results, and then all those electoral votes are formally counted in a joint session of Congress.
Got it.
And this happens on January 6th, following the election.
Okay, so it's not just about all the drama of election night.
No.
There's this whole formal process that happens afterwards.
That's right. It's a multi-step process. And the vice president actually plays a key role in that final stage.
Oh, what do they do?
You can think of the vice president as like the emissary for this big event. Their job is to oversee the counting of the electoral votes and then announce the final results to everyone. It's a pretty ceremonial role, but it's an important part of making it official.
So it's like they're opening these envelopes from each state. The votes are being tallied, and then bam, we have a new president.
Well, as long as one candidate gets that magic number of 270 electoral votes,
right,
then yes, the vice president declares the winner.
But what happens if no candidate gets to 270?
Oh, that's when things can get really interesting.
What happens then?
So if no candidate gets a majority of the electoral votes, the decision goes to the House of Representatives.
Wait, so Congress gets to decide who the president is?
Not exactly. Each state delegation in the House gets a single vote to cast as a group.
Oh, right.
So it doesn't matter if a state has a huge delegation or a small one. Their vote is equal.
So a state like Wyoming, with only one representative, would have the same power as California with its 53 representatives.
Exactly. It's a fascinating way to ensure that smaller states still have a big say in picking the president.
Yeah.
If it comes down to a House vote.
Okay.
And to win a candidate needs a majority of those state delegation votes, which is 26.
Oh, wow. I can only imagine the political maneuvering and the deal making that would happen if it ever came down to that.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not just the president, though, right? What about the vice president?
You're right. So if there's no Electoral College majority for president, the Senate gets to choose the vice president.
Okay.
And in the Senate, each senator gets to cast an individual vote.
Got it.
To win a candidate needs 51 votes.
So are you telling me we could end up with a president from one party and a vice president from a completely different party?
It is definitely possible.
That is wild.
It really highlights how unique and sometimes unpredictable the American electoral system can be.
This is mind-blowing. Okay, so we've talked about how this whole electoral college thing works, but what about those times when it actually produced a different winner than the popular vote?
Right.
I mean, that's what really gets people talking.
Absolutely. There have been five times in U.S. history where the person who won the popular vote did not become president because of the electoral college.
Wow.
And each of these instances has its own story and significance.
Five times. All right, we have to dive into these. Let's start with the very first time it happened.
Okay. That takes us all the way back to 1824.
Okay.
Andrew Jackson won the popular vote, but no candidate got a majority of electoral votes, so the election went to the House of Representatives.
Yeah, like we just talked about. So what happened? Did the House pick Andrew Jackson since he won the popular vote?
They did not. They ended up electing John Quincy Adams, even though he had fewer popular votes and fewer electoral votes than Jackson.
Wow. Talk about a controversial outcome. What about the next time this happened?
That would be the election of 1876.
Okay.
This one was a real nail biter. Samuel Tilden won the popular vote.
Okay.
But lost the presidency to Rutherford B. Hayes by a single electoral vote.
One electoral vote that must have been incredibly tense. What happened there?
Well, it all boiled down to disputed election results in a few southern states.
Okay.
There were accusations of voter fraud and voter intimidation.
Wow.
And in the end, a special electoral commission was created to decide the winner.
Sounds like a political thriller. I bet that election caused a lot of debate and division.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The 1876 election is still studied and debated by historians today.
Wow.
Because of how complex it was and all the questions it raised about the Electoral College.
Okay, so we've covered two instances. What about the other three times when the Electoral College flipped the results?
All right, so in 1888, we saw another reversal. Grover Cleveland, a Democrat, won the popular vote.
Okay.
And not by a small amount either.
Oh, wow.
But he lost the Electoral College and therefore the presidency to Benjamin Harrison, a Republican.
So even a pretty significant popular vote win wasn't enough.
It was the distribution of those votes across the states mattered more than the total national count.
That's wild. It really shows how the Electoral College isn't just some abstract idea.
Right.
It has real-world consequences.
Absolutely. And it's not just about the candidates who win or lose.
Yeah.
It shapes how they campaign, where they focus their efforts.
Right.
And even what issues they choose to prioritize.
Okay, I'm ready to hear about the two most recent examples. I know a lot of people are probably curious about these.
Yeah, so the 2000 presidential election between Al Gore, a Democrat,
okay,
and George W. Bush, a Republican, is probably one of the most well-known instances where the Electoral College produced a different outcome than the popular vote.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. It went down to the wire, right?
Mm-hmm.
Super close and controversial.
It was Gore actually won the popular vote.
Okay.
But the entire election came down to the results in Florida,
yeah,
where the vote margin was incredibly tight.
Right. There were all those recounts and legal battles.
Exactly.
It felt like the whole country was holding its breath.
It really was. It was a political drama that played out on the national stage for weeks.
Wow.
And in the end, after a Supreme Court decision stopped the recount, Bush was declared the winner in Florida.
Okay.
By a mere 537 votes.
537 votes. That's unbelievably close.
It is.
And those 25 electoral votes from Florida gave Bush the presidency, even though he lost the popular vote nationally.
That's right. The 2000 election really put the Electoral College back in the spotlight.
Yeah.
And fueled all these passionate debates about its role in American democracy.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how many other elections might have turned out differently if we had a different system in place.
For sure.
Okay, what about the most recent example?
Okay, so the fifth and most recent case is the 2016 election between Hillary Clinton, a Democrat, and Donald Trump, a Republican. Mm. Clinton won the popular vote by nearly 3 million votes.
I remember that election. I was glued to the news coverage that night.
Yeah.
It was another stunning example of how the Electoral College can produce a winner who didn't win the popular vote.
You're right. Despite Clinton's popular vote, when Trump won the presidency by securing a majority of electoral votes.
Right.
And this outcome reignited the debate about whether the Electoral College is still the best way to choose a president in the 21st century.
It's fascinating to see how these five elections have shaped this whole conversation about the Electoral College.
Absolutely. They raise some important questions.
Yeah.
Like, what does it mean for American democracy when the person who gets the most votes doesn't necessarily become president?
Right.
And how does this system affect how we engage in the political process?
Those are huge questions.
They are.
And ones that deserve a lot more discussion.
Absolutely.
And you know what, listeners? That's exactly what we're going to do in the next part of our deep dive.
Right.
We'll explore the arguments for and against the Electoral College. We'll look at some potential alternatives.
Yeah.
And we'll delve into what all of this means for you as a voter.
And we'll also look at the broader implications of this system for how we choose our leaders and for the future of American politics.
Buckle up, deep divers. We're just getting started.
That's right.
Welcome back, deep divers. We just explored how the Electoral College works and those five times in U.S. history when it produced a different winner than the popular vote.
Right. And that leads us to a big question.
Yeah.
Why do we still have the Electoral College?
Yeah. Is it still relevant in the 21st century or is it time for a change?
There's a big debate.
It is. So let's get into the heart of it.
All right.
What are the arguments for and against keeping the Electoral College?
All right, well, let's start with the side that's in favor of keeping the Electoral College.
Okay.
One of their main points is that it protects the interests of smaller states.
Okay.
Remember, each state's electoral votes are based on its representation in Congress.
Right.
Which means even less populated states have some say
right.
in choosing the president.
So it's like a built-in system to make sure that candidates don't just focus on winning over these huge, densely populated areas and ignore the needs of people in less populated states.
Right. They argue that without the Electoral College, candidates would only campaign in major cities.
Okay.
And rural communities would be completely left out of the conversation.
That makes sense. It's about making sure all voices are heard no matter where you live.
Right.
What are some other arguments in favor of keeping the Electoral College?
Another argument is that it encourages candidates to build really broad coalitions across different regions of the country.
Okay.
To win the presidency, you need electoral votes from a diverse mix of states, not just a few key areas.
Right. So it kind of forces candidates to appeal to a wider range of voters.
Right.
Address issues that matter to people all over the country.
Exactly. That's the idea. And it sort of discourages candidates from getting hyper-focused on niche issues that might only appeal to a small segment of the population.
Okay. Those are some compelling points for sure in favor of the Electoral College, but I know there are also strong arguments against it.
Yes.
Let's dive into those.
All right. So one of the most common criticisms is that the Electoral College goes against the principle of one person, one vote.
Okay.
Critics argue that it's fundamentally unfair that someone can become president without winning the popular vote.
Yeah, I can see how that would feel undemocratic to a lot of people.
What?
It's like your vote doesn't count as much as someone else's simply because of where you live.
That's right. And critics often point to the 2000 and 2016 elections.
Yeah.
As prime examples of how the Electoral College can lead to a winner who doesn't reflect the will of the majority.
And those elections really brought the debate back into the spotlight.
They did.
It makes people question whether the system is truly representative.
For sure. Another argument against the Electoral College is that it gives a disproportionate amount of power to a small number of swing states.
Okay.
These are the states where the vote is often very close and could go either way. Candidates know this, so they often focus their campaigns and their resources on these battleground states.
Yeah, because they hold the key to winning the presidency.
Exactly. So states that are reliably red or blue might get less attention from candidates.
Right.
Because their electoral votes are pretty much a foregone conclusion.
So it's like voters in those reliably partisan states might feel like their votes don't matter as much.
Yeah.
Because the outcome in their state is already predictable.
Exactly.
So we've got these competing arguments about fairness and representation and the role of smaller states.
Right.
It seems like there's no easy answer.
There really isn't. The debate over the Electoral College is complex.
Yeah.
And often contentious because there are valid points on both sides.
For sure.
It ultimately comes down to how you prioritize different values and principles in our electoral system.
Okay, so what are some alternatives? Could we reform the Electoral College or replace it with something completely different?
There are definitely a few ideas out there.
Okay.
One option is a national popular vote system.
Okay, so in this system, whoever gets the most votes nationwide becomes president.
Yes.
Regardless of how those votes are spread across states.
Exactly. It seems pretty straightforward, right?
It does. Yeah. Why not just go with whoever gets the most votes overall?
Well, even with a seemingly simple solution like that, there are challenges.
Like what?
Well, for one thing, it would require a constitutional amendment.
Oh, right.
And those are really hard to get passed.
Yeah.
You need a supermajority vote in both houses of Congress and ratification by 3/4 of the states.
Right. And getting that many states to agree on such a big change to the Constitution.
Yeah.
That's a tall order.
Yeah.
Are there any other options that don't require a constitutional amendment?
There is one that's been gaining some traction.
Okay.
It's called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact.
Okay. Break that down for me. What is that?
So it's an agreement among states where they pledge to give their electoral votes to the winner of the national popular vote.
Okay.
Even if that candidate didn't win their state.
So states would still have their electoral votes, but they'd be promising to use them based on the national results,
right,
rather than their own state's results?
Exactly. The compact would only take effect once enough states join to represent a majority of electoral votes.
Okay.
So it's like a workaround to achieving a national popular vote without actually changing the Constitution.
That's pretty clever. Are there any other reform proposals out there?
There are a few, like proportionally allocating electoral votes within states or awarding them based on congressional districts instead of statewide winners.
Okay.
But, you know, all of these have their own pros and cons.
Right.
And it would still be a major hurdle to actually implement them.
It sounds like changing the Electoral College, no matter how you slice it,
yeah,
would be a huge undertaking.
It would be.
Both politically and logistically.
Absolutely. It's so deeply embedded in American politics and history.
Yeah.
That any attempt to change it would face really strong opposition from those who benefit from the system as it is.
Right.
Okay. We've talked about the arguments for and against the Electoral College.
Right.
And we've looked at some possible alternatives. But before we wrap up, I think it's important to zoom in on how this system affects voters like you and me.
Absolutely. I think that's a crucial point.
Yeah.
The Electoral College has a very real impact on how we participate in the political process.
Okay.
For one, it influences where candidates choose to campaign.
Okay.
And how they use their resources.
So if you live in a swing state, you're probably bombarded with campaign ads and events.
You are.
But people in states that lean heavily toward one party might not see much action at all.
Exactly. And your vote might feel like it carries more weight in a swing state.
Yeah.
Because the race is so tight and every vote could make a difference.
Right. It's like your vote is this hot commodity.
It is.
In those swing states.
But that can also lead to this sense of apathy or disillusionment.
Yeah.
Among voters in states that aren't considered competitive.
Right. Like, why bother voting?
Yeah.
If my state always goes for the same party anyway. Right. It's a valid concern.
It is. And it makes you wonder if the Electoral College actually encourages people to get involved in the political process.
No, across the board, does it?
Yeah. This has been such an insightful conversation.
Yeah.
I feel like I have a much clearer picture of the Electoral College now.
Good.
From how it works to all the arguments surrounding it.
I'm glad to hear that.
But what happens next? I mean, this debate's not going away anytime soon.
You're right. And as we head towards future elections.
Yeah.
It's really essential for citizens to understand this system.
Yeah.
And to participate in these conversations about its role in our democracy.
Yeah, you've given us a lot to consider. What's one key takeaway that you want to leave our listeners with?
I think the most important thing is to remember that the Electoral College isn't just some abstract political concept.
Right.
It has real consequences for who gets elected and how our government functions.
So it's not just about knowing the rules of the game. It's about understanding how those rules shape the very nature of our political system.
Exactly. And ultimately, it's up to each of us to decide whether we believe the Electoral College is serving its intended purpose.
Yeah.
And whether we want to advocate for change.
This deep dive has really opened my eyes to the complexity of this issue.
Yeah.
I'm sure our listeners are feeling the same way, but we're not done yet.
We're not.
In the next part of our deep dive, we're shifting gears to focus on you, our listeners.
That's right.
What can you do to get involved in this debate?
We'll explore ways to make your voice heard, from advocating for reform to simply staying informed.
Right.
And having those conversations with friends, family, your community.
Welcome back, Deep Divers. So we've gone really deep on the Electoral College, how it works, the history behind it, the arguments for and against it.
It's been quite a journey.
It has, and now it's time to turn our attention to you, our amazing listeners.
That's right, because ultimately the future of the Electoral College rests in the hands of engaged citizens like yourselves.
Exactly. So let's talk about what you can actually do to make your voice heard in this important conversation.
All right, so what are some practical steps people can take to get involved?
Well, the first step might seem obvious, but it's super important. Stay informed. Keep learning about the Electoral College, its history, the different viewpoints out there.
Yeah, we've given you a good foundation with this deep dive.
Right.
But don't stop here.
Keep going.
There are so many resources available. Articles, books, podcasts, documentaries, you name it.
Yeah, your local library is a great place to start, and there are tons of reputable sources online.
Absolutely.
The more you know, the better equipped you'll be to participate in these conversations and form your own informed opinions.
Exactly. And don't just passively absorb information. Think critically about what you're reading and hearing.
Right.
What arguments make sense to you? What questions do you have?
Challenge yourself.
It's okay to be unsure or even change your mind as you learn more.
Totally.
The important thing is to approach this topic with an open mind and a willingness to really grapple with the complexities.
I love that. And once you feel like you have a good grasp of the issue, don't keep it to yourself.
Right.
Talk to people.
Yeah.
Talk to your friends, family, community members about the Electoral College.
Exactly. Share what you've learned. Listen to their perspectives.
Right.
Have those respectful conversations, even if you disagree.
Even if you disagree.
Because those discussions are so vital for creating a more informed public.
For sure. And remember, you don't need a PhD in political science to have valuable insights.
No, not at all. Everyone's voice matters in a democracy.
Absolutely. And your personal experiences and perspectives can really enrich those conversations.
Oh, sure.
Now, if you're feeling super passionate about this issue and want to take your engagement a step further,
yeah,
there are ways to get directly involved with groups advocating for Electoral College reform.
Right. There are organizations out there that are completely dedicated to this cause.
Right.
And they're always looking for volunteers and supporters to help spread awareness,
yeah,
and push for change.
So you can join these groups, donate to their efforts, participate in their campaigns.
Absolutely.
It's a great way to connect with like-minded people and make a real difference.
Yeah, and a lot of these groups have websites and social media platforms where you can find out more about their work and how you can get involved.
Exactly. And don't underestimate the power of contacting your elected officials. Let your representatives and senators know where you stand on the Electoral College.
Yeah, write letters, make phone calls, attend town hall meetings.
Exactly. Those are direct ways to make your voice heard.
Absolutely.
Let your elected officials know what matters to you.
Your elected officials are there to represent you, and they need to hear from their constituents.
They do. And even if they don't agree with you on the Electoral College,
right,
it's important for them to know that this is something their constituents care about.
It is. And hey, if you're feeling really ambitious, you could even think about running for office yourself.
There you go.
Right.
Why not?
Whether it's at the local, state, or national level, running for office is a powerful way to advocate for the changes you want to see.
So there you have it.
Lots of options.
There are tons of ways to get involved in this conversation about the Electoral College.
Yeah.
Whether you're just chatting with friends or actively campaigning for reform,
right,
your actions can make a difference.
They really can. The future of our democracy depends on engaged citizens.
Right.
People who are willing to learn, speak up, and work towards a system that they believe in.
That's a powerful message. We hope this deep dive has equipped you with the knowledge and the motivation to continue exploring this topic.
Yes.
And to make your voice heard.
Remember, change usually doesn't happen overnight.
Right.
But every conversation, every action, every voice adds to the ongoing story of our democracy.
So keep learning, keep talking, and keep pushing for the electoral system you want to see. And until next time, deep divers keep on diving.
Keep diving deep.